The condensation on the glass of my phone screen made the faces blur as I swiped. It was 11:14 p.m., the only window of time that belonged entirely to me, situated precariously between the last load of laundry and the 6 a.m. alarm that would start the hunt for matching socks and misplaced backpacks. I remember the exact weight of the device in my hand. It felt heavier than it should, like a lead weight pulling me into a digital current I wasn't sure I could swim in. The first face was a man named Mark, 38, standing on a boat with a fish. The second was Julian, who liked adventure and no drama. I lingered on that phrase, no drama. In the vocabulary of 2026, no drama is a digital shorthand. It is a locked gate. It means, don't bring me your history. Don't bring me your complications. And certainly don't bring me the two small humans who eat my cereal and occupy the center of my universe. To them, my life is a cautionary tale. To them, I am a liability. I swiped left. The motion was mechanical, a repetitive strain on the thumb that felt like a tiny private erasure of my own hope. I was 34 years old, a mother of two, and I was navigating a market that seemed designed to devalue everything I had become. There is an object I keep in the top drawer of my nightstand, tucked under a stack of old utility bills I'm still disputing. It's a small plastic dinosaur, a triceratops with a chewed-off tail. I found it in the crack of the sofa the day my ex-husband moved the last of his boxes out of the house. I didn't throw it away. I didn't put it back in the toy chest. I kept it there, hidden, a piece of the wreckage. It is my secret anchor. It represents the version of me that failed to keep a family whole. The version that is now forced to audition for a new role in a play where the script has been rewritten by algorithms. Every time I opened the app, I felt the phantom weight of that broken plastic toy. It was a reminder of the baggage the profiles warned against. I had become a woman who was constantly calculating the cost of her own truth. Do I mention the kids in the first three sentences? Do I wait until the first drink? If I wait, am I a liar? If I lead with it, am I invisible? The air in the bedroom felt thin, filtered through the hum of the white noise machine in the kids' room next door. I could hear the rhythmic, heavy breathing of my six-year-old through the wall. That sound is what I am trying to protect. Their peace is a fragile glass-walled garden, and I am the only sentry. Seeking a partner felt like trying to find a way to let a stranger into that garden without them trampling the lilies. But the digital market doesn't value gardens. It values storefronts. I matched with a man named David. His profile was sparse, but his smile looked tired in a way that felt familiar. He was an architect. He liked jazz. He didn't have the no drama disclaimer. We messaged for 3 days. Careful, curated sentences that felt like walking on eggshells. He asked what I did for fun. I wanted to say that fun was a concept I hadn't revisited since 2021. That my life was a series of tactical maneuvers involving school lunches and dental appointments. Instead, I said I liked hiking and local bookstores. It was a lie by omission. I was already hiding the reality of my exhaustion. I couldn't yet admit that I wasn't looking for a partner in crime or an adventure buddy. I was looking for someone who wouldn't look at my children as obstacles to be cleared. I was looking for someone to help me carry the weight. But the rules of the 2026 market dictated that I must appear weightless. To show the load is to lose the game. The buzzing of a fly against the window screen was the only sound in the room as I waited for his reply. The silence of the house at midnight is a specific kind of pressure. It's when the what-ifs start to pulse. What if I am never more than a single mom in the eyes of the world? What if the best parts of my heart are already spoken for, leaving only the scraps for a man who wants a woman with a clean slate? We agreed to meet at a bar downtown. I spent 40 minutes trying to cover the dark circles under my eyes with concealer that promised full coverage, but felt like heavy clay. I looked in the mirror and saw a woman trying to masquerade as someone who hadn't been awake since 5 a.m. I felt like a counterfeit version of myself. The bar was loud, a frantic energy of people trying to prove their worth through eye contact and expensive cocktails. David was already there. He looked like his photos, which was a relief. But there was a stiffness in his shoulders. We ordered drinks. The condensation on the cold glass felt like a shock against my palm, grounding me in the discomfort of the moment. For the first 20 minutes, we talked about work. We talked about the city. Then, the inevitable question came, the one that always feels like a trapdoor. So, do you have a family? I felt the Triceratops in my nightstand drawer vibrate in my mind. I told him I had a son and a daughter. I watched his eyes. There is a specific micro-expression that happens in that moment. A quick flickering, a mental recalibration of the cost-benefit analysis. It's the sound of a door being softly latched. He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes. "That's great," he said. "Must be a lot of work." The word work hung between us like a physical barrier. He didn't ask their names. He didn't ask how old they were. He shifted the conversation back to his recent trip to Portugal. I realized then that to him, my motherhood was a logistical hurdle, a scheduling conflict that he wasn't sure he wanted to navigate. I was being assessed, not for who I was, but for the encumbrances I carried. I stayed silent about the reality of my life for the rest of the date. I didn't talk about the flu that had swept through the house the week before, or the way my daughter still asks why Dad doesn't live here anymore. I played the part of the baggage-free woman. The practical consequence of staying silent was a second date. The emotional consequence was a feeling of profound betrayal of my own children. By hiding them, I was agreeing with the market that they were something to be ashamed of. I drove home in the dark, the city lights blurring through a windshield that needed cleaning. When I walked through the door, the smell of the house hit me. Stale milk, laundry detergent, and the faint sweet scent of children's shampoo. It was the smell of my real life. It was a beautiful, chaotic, exhausting reality, and yet I had just spent 2 hours pretending it didn't exist. The trap of the modern market is the illusion of infinite choice. We are told there is always someone better, someone simpler, someone who comes without a history. This creates a culture of disposal. If a woman has kids, she is complicated. If she is tired, she is low energy. If she is guarded, she is damaged. We are treated like products with expiration dates and manufacturing defects. I sat on the edge of my bed and opened the nightstand drawer. I took out the plastic dinosaur. The chewed-off tail felt rough against my thumb. This toy was a piece of a life that had ended, but it was also a piece of the life I was currently building. Why was I letting an app tell me that this was a liability? A week later, I went on another date, this time with a man named Marcus. He was a teacher. He had a dog. He seemed kind. We were sitting in a quiet booth at a diner, the smell of grease and old coffee hanging in the air. The fluorescent light overhead flickered rhythmically, a tiny, annoying pulse. I decided to stop playing the game. When he asked about my life, I didn't give the curated version. I told him about the morning madness, the school runs, the way my son cries when he loses his favorite blanket, and the way I often fall asleep while reading them bedtime stories. I told him that my time was a limited resource, and that my heart was already heavily invested. I waited for the latch to click. I waited for the shift in his eyes. Instead, he reached out and touched the back of my hand. "That sounds like a lot to carry on your own," he said. "You must be incredibly strong." It wasn't a romantic declaration. It was just an acknowledgement of fact. But in the context of the 2026 dating market, it felt like a revolution. For a moment, the pressure eased. I didn't feel like a liability. I felt like a person, but the relief was short-lived. Marcus and I saw each other for 3 weeks. On the fourth week, he stopped texting. No explanation. No, this isn't working. Just silence. The ghosting phenomenon is the ultimate expression of the digital meat market, the ability to disappear because a human being has been reduced to a profile that can be deleted. I was left with the silence of my kitchen at midnight, staring at a phone that refused to buzz. The practical consequence of speaking up, of being honest about the work of my life, was that I was deemed too high maintenance for a casual observer. The market had corrected itself. It had filtered me out. I went back to the app. Swiping felt different now. It felt like a form of self-harm. I saw a man who listed no single moms in his bio. He was standing in front of an expensive car, looking confident. I wondered if he realized that by excluding us, he was excluding the women who knew the most about loyalty, endurance, and the capacity to love under pressure. He wanted a surface, not a soul. The digital landscape is a desert of context. It strips away the nuance of why a home broke or how a woman survived. It turns our trials into red flags. I found myself looking at my children as they played in the backyard, their laughter a sharp contrast to the coldness of the screen in my pocket. I felt a surge of protective fury. How dare I let a stranger's preference make me feel like their existence was a flaw in my resume? I remember sitting in my car outside the grocery store, crying over a notification from a dating app. It was a match from someone I had swiped on days ago, a man who seemed perfect on paper. But as I looked at his photos, the gym selfies, the travel shots, I felt a profound sense of exhaustion. I couldn't do the audition again. I couldn't spend another evening explaining why I couldn't stay out late or why I couldn't go on a spontaneous weekend trip to Vegas. I realized I couldn't yet admit that I was terrified of being alone forever, but I was even more terrified of being with someone who tolerated my children rather than loving them. The market teaches us to compromise, to settle for being a secondary priority. It tells us that we are lucky to get any attention at all once we have baggage. The ticking of the clock on the dashboard felt like a countdown. Time is the one thing a single mother doesn't have. Yet the market demands we waste it on people who have no intention of staying. We are expected to participate in a casual culture when our lives are the furthest thing from casual. I deleted the apps. The act of pressing the small X and watching the icons vanish was a quiet defiance. It was an admission that I was currently incompatible with the world's version of romance. I walked into the house and found the plastic dinosaur on the floor. It must have fallen out of the drawer. I picked it up, and for the first time I put it in my son's toy box. I was protecting their peace by refusing to bring the digital meat market into our home. I was protecting myself from the slow erosion of my self-worth. The trial of the modern woman in this market is the pressure to be a commodity. We are told to optimize our profiles, to highlight our assets, and to hide our liabilities. But motherhood is not a liability. It is a crucible. It is the thing that made me who I am. If the market cannot see that as a superpower, then the market is broken, not me. I still feel the sting of the ghosting. I still feel the loneliness in the quiet hours after the kids are asleep. The aftermath is a quiet, heavy stillness. I am standing in my kitchen, the linoleum cold under my feet, looking at a drawing my daughter made of our team, me, her, and her brother. There is no one else in the picture. I don't know if there will ever be a man who sees the beauty in the drama or the strength in the baggage. I don't know if the algorithm will ever favor a woman whose primary commitment is to a garden she has already planted. The 2026 relationship market is a brutal place for a heart that has already been broken once. It demands we be shiny and new in a world that has already made us old and wise. I am 34 years old, and I am tired of auditioning for a role I already play perfectly every single day. I look at the empty space on the sofa where a partner might sit. It is a gap, a silence, a question mark. But as I turn off the kitchen light and head toward the stairs, I realize that the peace of the house is intact. The garden is safe. I haven't found love, but I have stopped allowing myself to be treated like a defective product. In a world of infinite swipes and casual erasures, choosing to be too much is the only way to remain whole. I am a mother. I am a survivor. I am a woman under pressure. And for now, the only superpower I need is the one that allows me to close the door on a world that doesn't deserve my truth. The phone sits on the charger, dark and silent. It no longer has the power to tell me what I am worth. I walk past the children's room, listening to the steady, rhythmic breathing that is the only metric that matters. I have survived the market by leaving it. What does it say about our world that a woman's greatest act of love is seen as her greatest flaw? I don't have the answer. I only have the weight of the day and the quiet of the night. I am still here. We are still a team. And for now, that has to be enough. The chewed-off tail of a plastic dinosaur is not a symbol of a broken home. It is a symbol of a home that is still standing, despite everything. I lay down in the dark, the silence finally feeling like a choice, rather than a sentence. I am not a liability. I am the anchor. And if the market can't handle the weight, then I will carry it myself, as I always have.